Welcome to the Gentleman Ultra podcast, where we continue our special series of three World Cup questions, where we ask the same three questions to some of our friends in the world of culture. Our guest today is producer extraordinaire of the always awesome Serie A Chronicles podcast, Simon Cosarano of Media Chronicles, a fellow good human and fellow Australian. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me. And well done pleasure. And congratulations with what you're doing with the Gentleman Ultra Pod. It's always a good listen. So, well done.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated. It's a drop in the ocean in terms of, I guess, quality compared to Serie A Chronicles and especially all what can we call it? I guess we can call it the technical aspect. Thanks for my always excellent editing skills, which are zero and none compared to yourself there. But yeah, no, it's awesome. It's great to talk to you.
It's all about the conversation, and that's the main thing, mate. So
yeah, that's right. That's right. So we'll get straight into it. So first question, what's your favorite moment from your World Cup past?
Okay, so obviously being Italian, this is going to be, you know, a very Italian centered discussion.
That's all right. This wouldn't be the first one. It's not the first one of the series, so it's all good.
Of course, and like I was saying to you before we started recording, I think I'm a little bit concerned. I might sound a little bit like Richard Hall's responses because some of them are similar. But so my favorite moment of all time of a World Cup has to be because I was actually at the 2006 World Cup final.
You're the first one I've spoken to that was there at the match.
Right. I was at four of Italy's matches during that tournament. So it has to be, of course, the moment that Zinedine Zidane headbutted Materazzi. No, I'm kidding. No one in the stadium actually saw that. No one saw it happen.
Except for the linesman pointing to the screen saying, look there, to the ref.
Whether that was, you know, like a lot of people say, the first VAR incident or the linesman actually saw it or the fourth official actually saw it. Who knows what the truth is there?
My theory was when you go to the ref, if you look at the replay, he's looking out of the side of his eyes because he doesn't want to turn his head towards the screen because he actually didn't see it as well, but he's trying to slyly look and he's like, oh, yeah, I saw it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. it was right in my forward line of sight, but no one was looking there because the ball was up the other end of the pitch. So everyone was looking where the ball was. So nobody saw it and they didn't replay it in the stadium. But anyway, let's go back to my favourite moment, obviously, is when Fabio Grosso's last penalty kick hits the back of the net and I lose my mind. Like my brother said at my wedding when he made a speech, he said that my wedding day was the second greatest moment of my life because the first was obviously the moment I was there to see Italy win the World Cup. And he's not far wrong with that. Because
that's awesome. It's all right. Yeah. Your wife's not listening. We can say it quite.
Oh, don't worry. She knows it already. Yeah. she's heard it before.
So how did you end up in the final? Were you playing to go to 2006, like all along? Or was you just kept going to games and kept going to games because they kept winning?
It was, a bit of a story. So I applied to get a ticket, any ticket in the ballot, probably a year or so beforehand or whenever it was that tickets went on sale, 2005. Might have been even early 2006. And I managed to get two tickets for a second round match in Dortmund, which turned out to be Brazil versus Ghana. Okay. The beauty of that was I've got two aunties and two uncles who live in Bochum in Germany that migrated from Sicily many years ago, but they live in Bochum, run restaurants. And Bochum is 20 minutes away from Dortmund. So you beauty. Two tickets. I rang up my mate Mel, lifelong friend of mine. We went to school and played soccer together since we were 8 years old. And I said, mate, pack your bags. We're going to Germany. So at that point, not knowing which game we were going to see, obviously, because it was a second round match, turned out to be, like I said, Brazil versus Ghana. Could have potentially been Brazil versus Italy. Because it was those two groups which were meeting in the next round. Anyway, while we were there, we went to different cities with friends of my uncle and bought tickets from scalpers. And the first match we saw was Italy versus Czech Republic, which we won 2-0, and it was Pavel Nedved's last international match ever. I bought that ticket, those two tickets, for €300 from a scalper probably 4 minutes before kickoff.
Oh,
wow. It was just, we went there trying, we couldn't find anywhere to get a ticket, and we were in a pub next to the stadium. And you know, after kind of giving up trying to find a ticket, I turned to Mel. You know, we're watching it on the big on the screen, and I turned to him and I said, "Look, I'm going to give this one last chance. Keep your phone in your hand. I'll call you if I get the if I find a ticket." I ran out. I found a guy. The street was dead because everyone was inside the stadium or inside the pubs. It was in Hamburg. And I said to him, you know, how much? He said, €300 each. I did not even bargain. I just, here you go. Here's the money. He goes, you're going to love it. They're going to be the best seats. And I'm like, oh God, is he scams me?
Yeah, yeah.
Turned out, no, they were legit seats. And we got in probably halfway through the Italian national anthem. And that moment, you know, I've grown up listening to the Italian national anthem in World Cups. But that moment that I got in and saw the players lined up for the national anthem, my heart was just jumping out of my chest. You know, it was just an amazing moment. So I could probably say even that moment is, you know, one of my favorite World Cup moments. But, you know, how can I go past, you know, the winning penalty? That's impossible.
Yeah.
But there are many moments that I could list. You know, I was at the semi-final in Dortmund, again in Dortmund, you know, Italy against Germany. I managed to get that ticket actually from the Italian Federation. I just walked into the Hilton Hotel. I said, I've come from Australia to follow Italy. Can you give me a ticket? He picked up a ticket and gave it to me.
Oh, wow.
You know? That was cheaper than the scalper one, luckily. But,
yeah.
And off I went. And I was at the Italy versus Australia game. But, you know, the semi-final, you know, I've never been more on the edge of my seat.
That half an hour. You know,
that was unbelievable. My nerves were, I was a wreck. I was an absolute wreck. And I was there on my own that time because my friend Mel had needed to go back home to Australia, unfortunately, so he couldn't go all the way through to the semi and the final with me. And I just remember, you know, I was in the upper corner section with all the other Italian fans, and just the intimidating atmosphere every time the Italian fans, you know, started up, you know, trying to sing or do a chant, the rest of the German crowd would just immediately drown us out by whistling or booing and or doing their own chants, and just drowned us out noise wise. And then when that final when those two goals went in, well, it was basically one long celebration, right?
Yes. There was no time. 3 minutes apart, or not even three minutes. Apart.
We had not finished celebrating, and you know, Grosso's goal, we turned around and Del Piero's plonking the ball into the top corner. It's like, what? I probably missed all his run from the defensive penalty box all the way through. Turn around and in time to see the ball go in again. And it was just total delirium.
Yeah.
It was, I can't put it into words.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, I'm getting goosebumps as you're telling me. Yeah.
I get goosebumps. I think about it often, you know, those two games, you know, the semi and the final. Just It's really difficult to put into words, you know, because I was 25 at that point. I'd grown up. My first World Cup was, you know, in my memory was Italia 90, and I had not missed a World Cup match. You know, just a total dedicated family to Italian football. You know, two brothers. You know, I'm the middle child of you know, with two brothers, family of Juventus supporters, and I'm the black sheep. I'm the Roma supporter, but just madly passionate about Italian football. And grew up with heartbreak, basically. Penalty shootout, you know, in Italia 90. Penalty shootout 94. Seeing our hero Baggio, you know, have to be the one. 98. And 2002, that let's be honest, that scandal, and even Spain paid for it as well.
Yeah.
You know, You could even throw in there Euro 2000. You know, we were 30 seconds away from winning that. 2004, the biscotto that Denmark and Sweden combined to stitch us up, and you know, all these things. Just all I knew of the Italian national team, loving them so much, was heartbreak. And then to be there when we actually won it, you know, you know, I can feel it inside me now just talking about it. You know,
yeah.
It's the most amazing feeling that I could ever experience in terms of being a football fan. And if you don't follow football, if you don't get it, then you just never get it. But if you get it, then you know. Yeah, so it's something that I'll carry with me for the rest of my days.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
Yes, you were by yourself, but you're surrounded by this big collective, you know, like even when I was over in the Euros for 2016, I was by myself, but you walk in and, and you see, you know, thousands of Italian jerseys, and there's not, you know, I support Regina, I support Roma, I support, you know, Vicenza, whatever it is. It's just everyone's there to watch Italy play.
Absolutely.
The episode of Serie A Chronicles that you put up when Nikki and Mina were talking about memories.
Yep.
And I'm not ashamed to admit it. And it happens to me every time that you posted the commentary and those two semifinal goals, the Del Piero goal, the Cannavaro, like I cry every single time I hear it. Just absolute joy.
It,
even as
it
I'm
makes
talking
me
about
emotional.
It now, all of my goosebumps, hairs in the back of my neck, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm a hairy dude, so they're everywhere. But it's just unbelievable. And
I've
30
said
minutes,
that...
you know, and like you said, I'm the same. My first World Cup, you know, I vaguely remember 86, but my first World Cup was 90. But I grew up supporting the Italian national team. I love the Italian national team because Australia was never there.
Yeah.
And to walk out into a stadium, and I'll get you to explain it, but what's that feeling like when you walk into the stadium and there's that door frame and you walk through the stadium door, whether it be, you know, gate 1A, whatever it is, for example, and you just see that green field, you see the two giant flags up there, and then you hear the national anthem.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can even remember back to the first Serie A match that I went to. Well, it wasn't Serie A, it was the Champions League. The first time I went to see Roma. Again, I bought the ticket from a scalper. It was Roma versus Real Madrid in 2002, Champions League. And we lost 3-0, but who cares? And Totti wasn't even playing that day because he was injured. But again, who cares? Just that feeling of entering the Stadio Olimpico in Rome and the choreography of those fans. And, oh, man, I remember walking up the stairs and seeing the green field. You know, I've only seen pictures, you know. It's
surreal
incredible.
When you're there. Like, but coming from Australia, people in Europe may not understand it because they just see stadiums everywhere and they can pop over to Italy and it takes an hour to get there or by a plane or whatever it may be. But when you head over there, it's just, it's surreal. It's surreal.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I went in 2016, it was Italy-Belgium, and that was for the Euros. But my friend said, oh, no, I've got tickets. And I said, you sure? Because I'd had tickets for other matches. He said, no, I've got tickets. And I'm like, okay. So we slowly pull up to this warehouse. We pull into a park, essentially like an industrial zone, and we pull up to a car park. And then some guy comes out of the warehouse and he points in the direction to go around the back. And he's like, this is either going to go one or two ways. He said, either we're going to be walking home because we're about to essentially be robbed and, you know, bloody taken for everything we got. He said, or the guy has two tickets. He said, but it's not looking very promising from the initial introduction. And then lo and behold, two tickets, you know, 300 euro, whatever they were. And, away we went, Italy, Belgium, and they won, you know. That's
brilliant.
Happy days. But that's amazing. Yeah. What did it feel like? How was your friend Mel? Was he kicking himself that he left?
Well, he had to because he couldn't get the time off work that I could. I actually took 2 months away. He took 1 month. Maybe he's got a little bit of regret. But together we went to that Brazil versus Ghana second round match. We went to Australia versus Italy together. And we went to a third match. I think we went to another one.
Italy-Ukraine, was it? Did you?
No, the Italy-Czech Republic as well.
Okay,
we went to that one together in the group stage. Yeah, so we went to three together, and then I went to the semi and the final on my own. I probably could have gone to more if I had have just gone, and bought more tickets from scalpers. But, you know, I needed to worry about my wallet being drained, unfortunately.
Yeah. What was it like afterwards, after that Germany-Italy game? Was it just surreal? Was everyone just on cloud nine with the Germans stunned? Was
so
it
at the final, I actually went with my cousin, with my uncle's cousin. So my uncle's friend's cousin. So we just kind of teamed up. We met up, on the train, and off we went to from the west side of Germany. We went to Berlin, and that was probably a 4 or 5 hour trip. So I got to know him there, and he was German Italian. So when we won it, you know, we were just hugging, and I was like scream crying. I don't know, some noise was coming out of me. It was ridiculous. And then I remember, my brother called me. One thing you mentioned, you know, Nikki and Mina's podcast about, you know, their World Cup memories that we did, 4 or 5 days ago. Mina was saying how when she became, you know, a professional journo and had to go to these tournaments, what she missed was actually being with her family and watching Italy, you know, because she grew up, you know, an Italy supporter as well with her family. And she missed that aspect of experiencing that with her family. So that's one thing that I did, you know, I can't complain, obviously, but one thing that I missed was being with my family when Italy won the World Cup. I wasn't with my own family, you know, and my brothers have both said to me that, you know, when Grosso scored that penalty, they were both just in front of the TV, and I can picture it in my mind, you know, the way they've told me. They were just on their knees and hugging, embracing, you know, and that's, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's that awesome emotion. About the, yeah. Yeah, no, but that's fair enough. You know, like that's what's special about the World Cup. It brings us all together. Absolutely. And especially, you know, from afar, like for me, a World Cup means early wake-ups, you know, people coming to the house, coffee, breakfast, you know, people knocking at the back door and the window to be let in, for me, waking up my mom, waking up, you know, my sister, et cetera, while we're all down there screaming at a godly hour of the morning. But yeah, like it was the same in the Euros to share a moment with my dad, which is, and I get emotional, I think about it, was when I walked into the stadium and the Italian national anthem started.
Yeah.
And I had called him and it was, you know, 4 in the morning and he answered the house phone and I just said, "Hey, listen, Papa, listen to this." And I just held up the phone and just played it. Like to me, that's World Cup or Euros, that's like my favorite moment, you know, of any football field. Because all the stuff that happens off the field, we remember that more for where we are or who we're with or, you know, what we're doing, you know, all of those sorts of wonderful memories and experiences.
Yeah. Like I said, that moment where we got in, we missed the first few bars or so of the Italian national anthem, but it didn't matter. You know, we got in and I'm watching Italian anthem being played and the team lining up. At an actual World Cup, is like this actually does happen. It's not just the show that comes on our TV. Like I'm at it. I'm in the middle of it.
It's real.
This doesn't happen.
Yeah. That's.
And I went and to actually go through all the way and see it with my own eyes. I watched Fabio Cannavaro throw that trophy up into the sky. You know,
yeah,
insane.
Yeah. We have it. I pinch myself
every time I think.
Yeah, were you able to talk to your parents, like your mum or your dad, after the final as well?
My brother, like I said, my brother rang me while I was still in my seat, you know, or at my seat. And one thing I should tell you is how close I was to the penalty shootout. I was in row 7, directly in line with like the penalty spot. So you could put an Olympic swimming pool in between the penalty spot and where I was, and I'd probably get wet. You know, that's how close I was.
Yeah, mate.
You know, it's not like I was up in the bleachers. Yeah. I was row 7 against at the fence nearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, it blows my mind. You know, so close that if you watch the penalty shootout, in the wide shot that they show when, you know, the players are walking to the spot, obviously they're zoomed in when they're about to take a kick, but in the wide shots when they're showing the players walking to the spot, I'm in the picture. I can't make myself out, but I know that I'm in the picture.
Yeah.
You know, because you can see the top bit of the screen's got crowd in it. I know I'm in there.
Mm.
It's insane when I think about that. I'm in the picture when they're showing the players walking up to the spot. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, amazing. It's cool.
It doesn't seem right.
I know it's tense watching back in Australia, you know, at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, but how tense was it in the stadium? Like, how were your nerves?
Like I said, just everything was shaking. Everything was shaking. Everything was shaking. And, you know, the friends that I was with, Giuseppe, his name was, he was just like, he was just a nervous wreck as well. And I'm just saying, you know, telling him, calm down, calm down.
You calm and, down. No, you calm down.
You know, and we're trying to work out if Grosso scores, we win. We win, don't we? Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because there's no loudspeaker over it. Yeah.
That whole final, that final, there's so much symmetry about that final, right? And what I mean by it is just symmetry or opposites, you know, contrasts. If you think about the different aspects of the things that happened throughout that final. So, you know, for example, Zidane scores that penalty that hits the bar and just goes half a foot over the line to score the goal, right? And then the reason we won the shootout is because Trezeguet hit the bar and it didn't go over the line. You know, what a contrast. It landed on the line and bounced out. So that contrast there. Then think about David Trezeguet himself, right? He was the one who scored the golden goal to win, to beat Italy in the Euro 2000 final.
Yep.
And then he's the one to miss in the shootout to more or less hand us the World Cup 6 years later. That's incredible. Those kinds of things. And a lot of people have probably never thought about those aspects of that final, but I just, that blows my mind, those things.
Yeah, I always think how like 2002, as bad as it was, and you know, for everything that happened, that was like that they were the foundations laid on the house for 2006. And you look at that.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. Like, I mean, 2002 was probably a stronger team on paper than 2006, but 2006 was probably more of a team.
Yep.
You know, if you, and also you could also say, look at the 82 team, right? I mean, I grew up, Italia 90 was the first World Cup that I remember seeing that I did watch, but I grew up with the myth or the legend of 82. And I think every Italian family had the 82 squad poster on their wall.
Up in the garage, had it.
In the garage, framed behind glass.
Yeah, framed
I've
behind
got it
glass.
In my house.
Exactly.
My house here, it's no longer behind the glass, but I need to put it back in the glass and put it back up on the wall. But
we
I've got
had one.
It.
We had one, yeah.
Yep. So I grew up looking up at those players. Obviously, you know, I was 2 or 3 years old when Italy won that. But to me, they were legends. There was this myth, you know, Paolo Rossi. Paolo Rossi was Italy, and I don't even mean was the, you know, Italian football team. Paolo Rossi was Italy to me. He represented what Italy is. You know, that for me growing up as a kid, that's what I felt. And I had pictures of the 82 team, you know, on my wall or on my my cupboard. And I hadn't even seen really much of them play. I've seen most of the matches now, but I'd probably seen just the goals at that point. But anyway, you know, that team won after that scandal, which, you know, put Paolo Rossi out for 2 years, you know, suspended for 2 years, you know, and they had that same combined siege mentality that Italy in 2006 had as well, because of the Calciopoli scandal and all that kind of stuff leading up to the World Cup. And just, again, that symmetry, it's just incredible. So we need a scandal to win a World Cup.
Yep. Tardelli, Grosso, you know.
Yes, again, well done.
You know,
yeah,
you had,
yeah,
that, you had, that run. And you also had, like,
did Grosso mean that? Like, did he have it in his mind? How could you? How could that come into your mind at that point? Is it just a coincidence that he did a similar kind of run after scoring that goal? Again, you know, against Germany, it's amazing.
And also the thing which I've said to a few of the people here I've talked to in this series, like that Italian team, it was contributions from everybody, you know, aside from, I think the reserve did a meet. Was it Marco Emilia? I can't remember from memory, but pretty much everyone contributed. You know, like Materazzi wasn't supposed to be there and he did. Nesta went off injured. It didn't matter. Grosso came in and had like the 2 weeks of his life. Del Piero is banging in goals like he's never missed one before for Italy. Lippi's playing four or five strikers at a point. De Rossi
in the final, we finished with four strikers on the pitch, you know, and Canavaro's, two in midfield, Pirlo and Gattuso.
Yeah, it's amazing. Crazy. It's
but
crazy.
then we get the critics saying that Italy is, a Catenaccio team, and
didn't deserve to lose. France defensive. Should have won.
Well, go and watch that match. Go and watch that match.
Yeah, it's
then
right.
Tell me that they're defensive.
Yep. You know? And as much as Baggio and Baresi missed those penalties, and you know, other people have missed penalties in the past. Seems to be that that penalty miss is always elevated to a higher plane because it is Baggio. No one ever says, oh, Trezeguet cost France the World Cup. Or was it, you know, this happened. It's always because Zidane got sent off. And that's the...
I don't think that France lost because Zidane got sent off. Because whoever came in for him and took his penalty scored it. Trezeguet was going to take one anyway. So it might have been Abidal scored his penalty, you know, or Willy Sagnol scored his penalty. So, and that was only 9 minutes that they were without him. And to be honest, I don't think that France was ever going to score, you know, after the penalty. I don't think they was ever going to score. Zidane had that amazing header that Buffon pushed over the bar with an amazing save. But that's probably the closest they came. And I remember Frank Ribery, you know, rolled one, you know, a few feet past the post, but it was a bit of a tame shot. Apart from that, there weren't a lot of chances for France in the final. Italy had Luca Toni hit the crossbar with a header before I think we scored the equaliser. Luca Toni also had a goal ruled out for offside, which would have made it 2-1.
Did he start the match?
He started, and then I think he came off for Jacuinto, if I remember correctly. You know, and these days, the goal that Italy scored, that, you know, that Toni scored, that was ruled out, would be considered a goal because De Rossi would be called passively offside, which is now not offside. So if it was today, Italy would have won that game during normal time. Okay, but anyway, so you could say on points we deserved it anyway, regardless of the.
Who cares? You were there. You got to see it.
Who cares? We won.
That's it. That's all that matters. You got to see it first.
And it's also in a way perfect that we won the World Cup on penalties because of, like I mentioned, all those heartbreaks on penalties.
Yeah.
You know, leading up to that, you know, 90, 94, 98. So it was appropriate in a way that we won one on penalties.
Yeah.
So again, kind of symmetrical or you know, yeah.
That's cool. You've been able to see a World Cup and a Euros championship victory in your lifetime.
I was also at the 2012 tournament. I went to every Italy game at Euro 2012, except the one on against England. I missed that one. So I was at the final when we got smashed 4-0 by that amazing Spain team. I've got to say that that's probably the best national team that's ever existed.
It's okay. I'll edit all of this out. I'll replace
no,
it.
But
that's the best ever Italy team that ever existed.
I mean, they had that run from 2008 to 2012 winning three tournaments. So I think that's probably the best quality football
title. Yeah,
the best quality football, regardless of Italy not winning. Yep.
Well, I think you may have answered the second question, but what's your favorite game from your World Cup life?
So I was thinking about this, and there's two contenders. First, I think, would be USA 94 semi-final, Italy against Bulgaria, but only the first half. The second half kind of fizzled out into a bit of a stalemate from my memory, and my main memory of the second half was Baggio pulling up lame, his hammy or his quad, whatever injury he sustained there.
Is why he played the final on one leg, technically. Yeah. You know,
I actually think that he shouldn't have started. He probably should have come on maybe later in the final, but they should have started Zola, who was back from that suspension that he needed to needlessly serve, let's say. But the first half of that semi-final is unbelievable. I just think if you watch Demetrio Albertini playing in the center of the park, playing like almost like a quarterback, just spraying balls over the top of the defense for Baggio to score those beautiful goals, and he even hit the bar himself, and he was just on fire. And I just remember that was a beautiful half of football for Italy. So that was always a favorite match of mine. But obviously, you cannot beat the 2006 semi-final. Because it was just end-to-end, open play, just absolute craziness. You know, Cannavaro was just, they called him the Muro di Berlin, or the Wall of Berlin, the Berlin Wall, for a reason, you know, even though it was in Dortmund. But,
he was launching counterattacks and charging out of his box and
it was
clearing headers. And he was
crazy. He wasn't, I mean, he started the counterattack for the second goal that Del Piero scored. But aside from that, you know, with that amazing header, and then collected his header after that by nicking it off Podolski, just incredible. But aside from that, he was just throwing himself at everything, and Materazzi was amazing as well. And
they complemented each other really well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you see those clips, you know, like you see those video clips where they edit, like, you know, this is Cannavaro's World Cup journey, and I'll put like, you know, a 10-minute video clip, and it's just all him clearing headers and tackling people and, you know, gaining possession and intercepting balls left, right, and center. Yeah, it's amazing.
Just needed to put his foot out and he would take the ball off the striker's foot. You know, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it went to extra time, right at the start of extra time, we hit the Gilardino hit the post, and then I think a minute and a half later, Zambrotta smashed the hardest shot you would ever see against the crossbar. And I always say that Fabio Caressa, the Sky Italia commentator, you obviously know, and Giuseppe Bergomi's sidekick, those two, you know, obviously, you know, if you're at the match, you weren't hearing the commentary. But later on, when you go back and watch the highlights, was just a gift we were given. Their commentary, you know, Caressa's commentary, just put poetry to the pitches, you know. Yeah. And you don't, and I don't think you even need to. Like,
if you think of that game, I think of the Italian commentary. I can't even remember who commentated it for SBS. I can't remember who I was listening to, but I just immediately go back to true story. I've got the, I've got a, on the USB in the car, I've got all the snippets from that World Cup. So occasionally I will play it in the car and I've got a bit of a long journey and I just, it's amazing. And shout out too to that Bulgarian team, because they were sensational. That
in 94.
Cup. You know, they like knocked out Mexico, penalties. They beat Germany. I think. And then they, you know, pushed Italy. And then obviously
they had some really good players, you know, Vechkov, Kostadinov, Stoichkov, obviously, Hristo Stoichkov. And you can't forget Ivanov, the giant monster at the back. You know, he was a character with the big beard that went up to his eyeballs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I think he's actually passed on. If I remember correctly, he might have passed on. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn there, but I think I read that.
Okay,
which would be a shame. Yes.
They had a fantastic tournament. So again, it's one of those teams, I guess, like in the World Cup, you see these teams and the players, you've never heard of them, you've never seen them before, that just come out of nowhere to surprise you, which is great. Always good.
The beauty of the World Cup.
Sure. And even Stoichkov, for everything he'd done, like a lot of people had never seen him play before. A lot of people had never heard of him before.
He was a beast at Barcelona. I loved watching him, and I loved his arrogance, you know, just the way he was so overtly confident, you know, he was a good player to watch. And I think he spent some time at Parma as well, didn't he?
Yeah. And then same like in Romania with Hagi, because Hagi was there. He was at Brescia. Hagi again for Romania, that tournament, again, just blew people away. It was like, but I remember being at Bulgaria, Romania, and even Sweden to an extent.
Sweden were good. Thomas Brolin. I remember the
Henrik Larsson.
Free kick in the third place playoff. Just they did this awesome move, I remember. And just fooled. Who did they play in the?
Bulgaria. It was like Brolin, Larsson, Kenneth Anderson's another one. Legend in Italy with
his,
as well.
Kenneth Anderson would do his Aussie rules goal.
goal celebration.
celebration. Yeah, that was cool.
All right. And your last question. Yeah. What's your favorite team from your World Cup journey?
Okay. So I've obviously, like I said, you know, grew up with the myth of 82 and that beautiful team. And I love watching all those matches and, you know, especially the Italy versus Brazil match. And, you know, everyone raves about, you know, that Brazil team. But to me, they weren't that special, to be honest. I don't get it with that Brazil team because they had a great midfield, obviously. But as a team, I don't think they were that fantastic. You know, bit of fancy stuff here and there, but they beat Scotland and, you know, they beat Argentina, I'll give them that. But aside from that, you know, Italy beat them well and truly, and it should have been 4-2 rather than 3-2, because right at the end, Antonioni had a goal incorrectly ruled out for offside. No one seems to remember that.
Yeah, that's what Tim Vickery brought that up, and when we spoke.
And yes, you're right. Podcast. I was really glad that he brought that up.
And he said it should have been 4-2 to Italy. Yeah,
that's right. That's
go back
right.
And listen
one
to
of
that
the
in the
few
catalog.
People, one of the few people who actually mentions it. So Italy trounced Brazil in that match, well and truly, and then went on, scored 11 goals, against, you know, in the last four matches, which were against the current world champions at the time, Argentina, that, you know, supposedly amazing Brazil team against a very good Poland team, and against the then current European champions in the final, West Germany, you know. So what an amazing team. But my favorite ever World Cup team is the Italia 90 squad, because that was my first love in football, right? So I can't ever go past them. And I was, you know, I'm a Roma fan from when I was about five or six years old. The reason why is because I had an uncle living in Rome who was working for Barilla at the time, the pasta producer.
That's Italian a great
pasta
geek.
Producer. He was a sales rep for them, and they were Roma's main sponsor. So, and he happened to get some T-shirts, sent them over to us, to myself and my brothers. I think they'd already chosen Juventus, but I hadn't really gotten into football at the time. So I had a Roma shirt, so I was a Roma fan. That's how it happened. And Roma happened to have this amazing midfield captain, midfield playmaking general called Giuseppe Giannini.
The prince.
Who, yes, il principe, who subsequently became my idol, and to this day still is my footballing idol. And then when I saw him playing, you know, in that Italia 90 team, and what I loved about his role in that team is just everything went through him. You know, he's not the most skillful player ever, you know, definitely skillful, but he's not a Baggio type, let's say. But everything went through him. You know, he was, you know, he took free kicks. He sent, you know, he put in the through balls. He just was the midfield rotation man. You know, the play just went through him. I loved that. I loved that. I wanted to be like that, you know, when I was playing soccer down at my local team. You know, I tried to model myself on him as much as possible, and his elegance and style, the way he would tuck in the back of his shirt but let the front hang out. It was just so classy. His long flowing hair, and he was voted on, you know, on Australian TV, SBS. I remember they did a poll at the beginning of that World Cup. I was 9 years old, but I still remember this. They did a poll you could ring in and vote for the sexiest footballer in the World Cup. And it was between Giannini, Jürgen Klinsmann, I think maybe Thomas Kuravi from Czechoslovakia might have been one of the contenders as well. And Giannini won it.
Hands down.
So yes, everything about him was, I just fell in love with him, and I fell in love with that team. Obviously, we had Baggio, Schillaci, you know, those two emerged out of nowhere. They weren't even starters, but they just came to life in that World Cup. And, you know, Bergomi, Baresi at the back were just, you know, have you ever seen a better defensive pairing? A 19-year-old Paolo Maldini flying down the wing, sending in crosses. And
I always love that he wore number 7 for that tournament too.
Yeah. I always wanted to wear number 13 when I was playing.
I was just about to say,
because
you wear
Giannini
13?
Was number 13 in that World Cup. And if I couldn't get 13, then I would choose both, 15, because that was Baggio.
He laid on both goals for Baggio. Was it the Czechoslovakia game?
He I did. He started the 1-2.
He started the 1-2,
Baggio,
didn't he? Yep.
For Baggio to go on that run against the Czech Republic, yes.
Yeah, amazing.
He set up a number of goals. Yeah, he was, you know, part of the goal against Argentina in the semi-final for that Scilacci finished off. He sent in a free kick for Aldo Serena against Uruguay to score. I remember it was Aldo Serena's birthday when he scored that goal. Just these little things that you remember when you think back. It's amazing. And one thing I remember about that Italy versus Uruguay, I think that was the second round match, Luigi Di Agostini took a free kick. And do you remember Roberto Carlos's free kick in Le Tournoi de France in 1997 before the 98 World Cup? Remember that free kick that turned at a right angle and he scored against, I think it was against France. I think Luigi Di Agostini is the closest I've ever seen to that free kick. He took one a bit closer, but it swerved almost as much as Roberto Carlos's, and Uruguay's goalkeeper Alvarez, me and my friend Mel, we always talk about this. We were actually talking about it yesterday when I told him that I was coming on this show. Uruguay's keeper just he made the most outrageous save that you'll ever see. You know, it should be up there with, you know, the Gordon Banks save, I think. And he almost put his shoulder out. And, you know, he needed treatment after making this save. He flew from one post to the other to save that. And I remember D'Agostini just clapping his hands together and, and shaking them, going, "What the hell? How did he get that?" You know, yeah, that was a beautiful, beautiful team.
And Giannini was a leader too. You know, like he's captain for Roma for so long, but
yeah
he had.
Unfortunately, he didn't have a long Azzurri career. You know, I think he only played, I think it was 47 games. So when Sacchi came in was it early 92 or late 91, whenever he took over from Vicini, he never called up Giannini, just didn't want him. He wasn't the type of player that he wanted, unfortunately. So I don't know why. But yeah, it kind of cut him out of the national team when he was at the top of his game.
And he continued to play for Roma too. It wasn't like he wasn't playing regularly. Well,
he finished with Roma in 96 and then went on to play for a season and a half in Austria.
I was about to say, did he go overseas? Yeah, he went overseas.
Yeah, he went to Austria.
I remember that.
Came back to Napoli for only four matches because Carlo Mazzone was the coach and wanted him back. But then Mazzone got sacked, so Giannini ended his contract because he only wanted to play under Mazzone, and he went to play with Lecce in Serie B and was part of their promotion back to Serie A, and then he retired. He didn't play again in Serie A after that.
Wow. Imagine being a Lecce fan, and then he just rocks up after, you know, a quarter through the season. Hey, do you want to sign Giannini? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, look, sure. I think, you know, he had a career that probably he could have got more out of his career. But I just loved him. I loved everything about him. I loved the way he played. I just loved him on the ball. So stylish, yeah. You know, obviously, you know, there's better players. There's been better players, Budgell being one of them. But yeah, for me, he was the start of it. Mm. Yeah,
awesome. Well, thanks, Simon. It's been unreal to share all these memories and stories. Yeah, fantastic experiences. I was my chest was tightening as you were explaining extra time and you know, the final and the Germany game. But yeah, it's so cool we got to see that, you know, live and in person. And like you said, these are like emotional moments that we share with people we love, you know, like and those memories, they last a lifetime. So yeah, it's been absolutely. Been great to share it.
Likewise, yeah, thanks. So thanks for having me on. And yeah, it's great to have an opportunity to talk about it because I can't remember last time I had a conversation like this about those things. But like I said, I think about it and I have thought about it every day since. And I think about it every day. That's what winning the World Cup does, you know. Yeah. One thing we didn't mention was, you know, the Australia-Italy game. I told you I was there. But what a conflict. Let's just say that I hope they never play each other again.
Well said. Well said. So, yeah, for those that don't know, where can we find your podcast, your work and everything else?
Yeah, just look for Serie A Chronicles podcast with Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini, which I am the producer of. Subscribe to that. We've got a Patreon subscription, so you get extra content as well. So check that out. Find us on Twitter at Serie A Cron Pod. And myself personally on Twitter is Simon Chronicles.
Perfect. Been awesome. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Frank.
Well, that was another great conversation with Simon Cozzarano of Media Chronicles. Of course, you can find Serie A Chronicles where you find all your good podcasts. Thanks for listening to the series and sharing it and all the great feedback. It's been unreal to share everyone's memories and anecdotes and everything else that comes with the World Cup. Don't forget to rate, review, and share the podcast where you can. Every little bit helps. Take care and enjoy your culture.